Hello and welcome to the Radio Academy podcast. I'm Laura Rawlings. Josh Tate recently became the UK's youngest newsreader at just 16 years old. So on his first day of work experience at Devon's Radio X, he rocked up and ended up on air reading an actual bulletin, which is quite different to my own work experience. Maybe more on that later. But unsurprisingly, the story got picked up by lots of places, including BBC Breakfast and Times Radio and the Radio Academy. And Josh was invited to do a bulletin on Matt Chorley's show. What was that like? Here's Josh.
It was incredible. I loved every second of it, even though I was quite nervous beforehand. I was pacing around the studio, like, what if I make a mistake? But I didn't make a fluff, I didn't make a mistake, and I was really proud about that. And it's just great that 16 years old and I've been on national radio. In BBC Breakfast, they were talking about me for a few minutes. That was when I had to pinch myself. On BBC Breakfast, local boy from Uffgame. I couldn't believe it, but I've got contacts with Sky and I've been invited by the director of Sky Sports Formula One to sit in their production suite for a live Formula One Grand Prix.
Wow. I mean, this is lots of people's dream. Well done you.
Thank you.
For getting out there. It does take a bit of courage and bravery to go with these things and say, yes, it is a bit hairy.
Going from a year prior, throwing up before my GCSE mocks, yeah, and being able to go on national radio live to hundreds of thousands of people, I don't know
well,
how that's happened.
Okay, so on that, what would you say to anyone who is following in your footsteps? You know, what would you say to your younger self about how you have overcome that?
Just be confident with what you do. Just don't overthink, don't stress. Everything will be fine. Everything happens for a reason. I'm just proud about what's gone on, really.
What a brilliant experience, and sounds like there's lots more to come. It made us think, so what are bosses looking for when it comes to newsreaders? What is it that they want to hear and what is it that they definitely don't want you to do? So we have gathered three radio bosses in charge of news at their respective stations. We've got Toby Seeley, who's head of news at News UK Broadcasting, so Talk Radio and Talk TV, Talk Sport, Virgin UK and Times Radio. Lorraine Herbison, who's head of news and sport for Bauer Media in Scotland, so that includes Clyde One, Forth One, TFM, West FM, essentially all of Scotland, including Greatest Hits Radio Scotland. And Paul Nero, who's the managing director and controlling stakeholder of Devon's Radio X, also editor for the local democracy reporting scheme for Devon, which is funded by the BBC. So there is a big clue in the title, newsreader, but the role of newsreader really does vary from station to station. So I wonder, what does the job typically involve at each of our guests' stations, starting with Toby?
So we have a sort of slight split between newsreaders that will predominantly read on one network and other newsreaders that will be used across brands, across different networks. Some of them will engage in some reporting as well, whether that be on location for particular events or whether it will be packaging up in the base here. Essentially, they'll work either on one major platform or across different platforms. Many of them also produce some of the podcasts that we make.
Okay, thank you. Lorraine?
Well, our newsreaders mainly start out as bulletin editors, and that means they have to put the bulletins together and obviously read the bulletins as well. They can also be out reporting, and they can be working on varying services, and they probably do between 2 to 3 bulletins per hour. They can progress through the ranks to become news desk editors, etc. But the main role is to sound fabulous on air.
And Paul?
Sounding fabulous on air is, of course, the central thing for anybody who's coming to Radio X. So at a small station like ours, where we have just 11 people working across the whole station, which is editorial, programming, sales, admin, you do everything. One of our journalists will be writing, reading bulletins in the morning, writing things for the website. When you're out and about, you clip audio for use in other people's bulletins or your own. You're writing content for the website. You're doing the social media to get people to read those stories. And if you're a local democracy reporter, you're doing our weekly Devoncast podcast as well.
It's so interesting hearing, as you would expect, about how the role does vary. In terms of skills and experience and training, what do you expect aspiring newsreaders to come to you with? Toby, it's network national stations. What are you expecting in terms of qualifications for starters?
Qualifications, I think, can be a movable feast. So I'm not one of those people who believes that you must have done a broadcast degree or that you must have some formal qualification. Starting point for me is passion and some degree of knowledge. So if you are really passionate about the news, that's a kind of prerequisite because you are reading the news. And then people bring various levels of knowledge of news events with them. So, you know, if you've only been on this earth for 20 years, the expectation for you to know what happened back in the 1960s and 70s is perhaps less than it is on somebody who's been around for 50 or 60 years. But you should bring knowledge and you should bring passion.
Right, so that was going to be one of my questions, actually, whether you expect newsreaders to have a decent grasp of the news of the day, and the answer is most definitely yes.
Absolutely, yes, yeah. 100%. If you can't demonstrate that you are interested in what's going on in the world and that you understand most of it, then this is probably not the right career path for you.
Mm. And interesting what you said about qualifications. That isn't a thing that you absolutely have to have. I think people often have that conundrum. Should I go and study a postgrad for a year in order to become a newsreader?
I don't think it's ever a bad thing, but I have always wrestled with whether this is a profession or a trade. And I think that it can be either. I don't think you need formal qualifications, but I think if you have them, then obviously it's demonstrated a commitment to the industry and to knowing more about it.
Okay. Lorraine, is there anything you would add to that?
I completely agree with everything you just said there, Toby, actually. I mean, let's be honest about this, though. Most people we do take on do have some sort of journalism training and qualification. And, you know, it's very rare that we take somebody on who doesn't have that. But it does happen, you know. We have schemes and so on for apprentices, and it has had a lot of success. So it's not, like you said, a prerequisite, but it does help. The passion is the thing for me as well. You have to listen to audio and you have to be listening to radio and you have to have a knowledge of what's going on in the world. And for me, you have to be really well organised and you have to have a really good voice. The voice is the first thing. You're going to be going on air. I need to hear a good voice. And that's why I do all the voice coaching for Bauer across the UK with our news team. I find it really rewarding because you can get instant results with somebody just by talking to them for 5 minutes. That is absolutely key. The warmth in the voice, the style of our style of news reading is obviously very, very conversational. It's commercial radio. But the knowledge and the passion, being legally sound and being well organized, because as you said earlier, Paul, you know, you need to be, you're running reporters, you're reporting yourself, you're managing multiple bulletins, you're putting stories online, you're sharing them to social media, you're planning for the next day. The job nowadays, I would say, is in many ways easier. You know, all the information's at your fingertips. But in many ways, I think it's much more difficult because you have almost like information overload coming to you and you have to, you know, monitor so many sources and make sure you don't miss anything while also juggling the demands of on-air, online and social and the needs of the team and the reporters that you're working with. So there's a lot of skills you need, really, but a beautiful voice and good voice is number one.
Yes, so much in all of this. Paul, I'm going to come to you, but you just reminded me, Lorraine, of how things have changed. My first work experience in a newsroom in commercial radio, and I was given the task of monitoring teletext for the entire day. And you know how slowly that changed, and there were only about 8 pages. Paul, brilliant voices is something that you and the team spotted in Josh, isn't it? And that's, I'm guessing, a big part of how he got the chance to read bulletins.
Everything starts with the voice for us, but also what Toby is saying and Lorraine too, it's enthusiasm and your ability to use that voice to communicate and tell stories. And then next, it's the writing, I think. How can you take complex information? People still send us 500,000 word press releases that you haven't got time to read all of this. How are you going to succinctly tell that story in a paragraph? If we look at the local democracy reporters, again, funded by the BBC, those people do have to be qualified. The BBC wants people to work to the NQJ, the National Qualification in Journalism. Somebody like Josh comes along, he wants to be a sports reporter. Josh is so enthusiastic and wants to do everything. Our issue sometimes with the younger members of the team is to say, whoa, you can't do everything. Do less and do it really well. If you haven't got that qualification, what we don't want you to do is get us into trouble. So you do need some formal tuition, even if it doesn't result in an NQJ qualification at the end.
Okay, so on the sounding great bit then, let's just stay there for a moment. And you've all said very clearly, yes, of course the voice makes a difference. So what's in fashion, what's out of fashion? You know, is it not fashionable now to have the Queen's or King's English?
Accents are absolutely fine nowadays. This is the thing, you know, years ago, obviously, I was always told to sort of refine my voice a little and not sound too broad farmer background where I come from. But I do think it's very subjective. So someone will love the broad accent and someone else will just, it'll put them off and you won't get a job. So there is an element of, I always say to the people I'm working with, look, accents are not a problem at all anymore, but you might need to refine it slightly just so you speak clearly and enunciate your words and you've got good diction, because no matter what you're doing, you have to have good diction. And that's quite challenging for someone like myself from Northern Ireland who speaks very, very fast. Just little skills like that, speaking, you know, within the certain style of your radio station art is conversational, speaking in a conversational style. But the main thing is just that you're authoritative, you're engaging, and you absolutely, at the same time, sound like you know what you're talking about.
I think on the regional accents point, the days where you needed to sound like a kind of 1950s plummy BBC type is long gone. I think actually regional accents can be a real selling point and a real plus. When I'm looking for voices, I'm also looking for the right kind of style for different platforms. So across the brands here, the kind of delivery that you'd be doing on Times Radio would be quite markedly different from Virgin UK or from TalkSport. You're almost looking to fit the voice to the network to some degree. Mm. So the different tones and textures of a voice, I'm listening for that, out for those kind of different flavours as well.
Mm. So just to shoehorn in the showreel here then, when you're doing a showreel, it sounds obvious, but it's always worth repeating. You can't really just have one and send to all, because actually you need to reflect, be what you would sound like on that station.
Absolutely right. The other dilemma then is if you're applying for a job with a variety of platforms, you want to be able to demonstrate your versatility and your variety of different forms of delivery, which of course, as Paul was saying, is all about the writing skills and all about the way you write.
I moved to Devon. I'm a Yorkshireman. I moved here 40 years ago. I was told quite explicitly by my friends at BBC Radio Devon at the time, I will never broadcast in Devon. I have a Yorkshire accent and it's just not acceptable on a Devon radio station. Now, I do think things have changed, but I now run a Devon radio station. So I think if somebody came along with a very heavy Glaswegian or Scottish or Yorkshire accent, you know, even from the places I'm from, I think I would be thinking, how is this going to go down with my listeners in Devon? So perhaps it might be different on a national station to how it is on a regional one or a county-wide one. And that's a form of discrimination I actually don't feel comfortable with. But it's what would be acceptable to our Devon listeners, given we bang on all the time about we are Devon's radio station.
Mm. It's such an interesting one, isn't it? We used to have someone who was Spanish and they would do packages and things on breakfast. It became a real strength of her, like it was a distinctive feature. So it sort of depends how you make it work on your station, doesn't it? I want to whiz round and ask you about the hardest things to get right or the common mistakes that people make and what they may be able to do about it. Lorraine, what do you notice? Things we haven't perhaps mentioned already.
My absolute bugbear nowadays, and I don't understand what's happening in our education system. Gosh, I sound really old now.
Go on, Lorraine.
Grammar. What's happening? It's just very, very difficult nowadays to have young people who understand good grammar. Sometimes some don't understand that it changes the meaning of the sentence. So therefore, if you've written a script as a reporter for a newsreader or a bulletin editor, if you gave that to me, I don't think I would be able to read it correctly, because there and there are spelled incorrectly, then it would change the meaning in my head. So it's just my personal thing, and you guys might not agree, but I've just noticed over the years having to be much more firm about grammar than perhaps I did in the past.
Toby, anything else? Any bugbears?
Yeah, I've got two, actually three. Clichés and Americanisms. You know, we all default to what I call journalese, which is the clichés. The outcome remains to be seen and all that kind of rubbish. I don't like Americanisms. I can't stand reach out. This is reaching out for those listening. I'm reaching out with my arm. Schedule, not schedule, is one of mine. I can't stand that. You know, you're supposed to be wordsmiths. Enjoy the English language and try to spot where the Americanisms are. Although I'm a massive hypocrite and will drop a few Americanisms myself, so you can't be too rigid. The other one is energy. President Joe Biden's visited his long-lost relatives, you know. It's a difficult job because so much of it starts at 5:30 in the morning or 4:30 in the morning. But you're coming in and saying to the world, this is happening, and it's important and it's exciting. So, and when you're tied to that desk hour after hour doing half-hourly bulletins, energy, your energy just drops away. And maintaining that and sounding like you're interested, even when all you're really worried about is going home and feeding the cat, is the showbiz behind the showbiz. And it's important in news reading, just like it is anywhere else.
So let me chuck this at you then. I mean, it would be easier then, would it, to do what I saw happen on social media, this QAT artificial intelligence newsreader. You could just have one of those instead. Or are we always going to want to hear an actual human's voice, just very speedily from each of you? Toby, you're nodding, saying...
AI will come and it will find its role. But ultimately, you will. I doubt you'll ever create that human connection that a real human can deliver. I hope you don't.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, when I was newsreading years ago, best job ever. And I can still miss it. And I would rue the day that would happen. I agree with you too, Toby. It will come. But humans know best. So, it's the best job in the world. It's such fun.
I wonder, you know, as we are consuming news in different ways now, do you think the current format, you've got your news at the top of the hour, your bulletin, that's the big one. Are we going to see changes here? Are you already starting to see changes and thinking about that within your organisations?
For us, news is part of the entertainment, so we don't want a miserable bulletin to stop that entertainment at the top of the hour full of violence and rapes and murders. So we also have to think about what that story collection is at the top of the hour. But we want the news through the hour as well. We might not actually call it news, but we're putting newsy-based items in our output across the schedule. The top of the hour is an appointment to listen, isn't it? And it breaks up the programming, and people know what to expect. So I think we'll be seeing that for the foreseeable future, but we don't want exclusively news to be in the news.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Toby, what were you going to add?
Well, I'm constantly messing around, deconstructing the bulletins, where they come, how they come, piloting stuff, never quite being satisfied that it's a better solution. Paul's hit the nail on the head. The bulletins are part of a bigger whole. Programming, the pace of programming, the structuring of programming build around moments, of which bulletins are really important ones. So I think you can totally deconstruct them. You can do them in totally different ways, but they certainly have found a home on the top of the hour and on the halves.
We've been looking at lots of different things like on-demand bulletins, you know, just shout at Alexa to call up a bulletin. And I think we just launched one of those in the Republic of Ireland this week, actually. So I think that's the way it's going to.
Okay, thank you so much. Can I just whiz round you one? Any final thoughts, tips, pieces of advice that you might share for anyone who perhaps wants to come and work at one of your stations? Paul, what would you say?
Get in touch, come and see us. We're always looking for new talent. We do have a policy here in that we're looking for Southwest talent. So you have to have a great connection, ideally to Devon or Devon and Cornwall, the greater Southwest. We're a small organisation, so we haven't time to listen and deconstruct and feedback on hundreds of showreels. So make sure that when you're approaching us, you're talking about the Southwest.
Toby?
Never, ever think that you're putting me out by getting in touch. I need newsreaders all the time. I'd love to hear from you. Always get in touch. Just do it informally. It's not a big deal. Just drop me a line. I'm always here.
And do you mean an email?
Yeah. Email me, tweet me, whatever, however you want to do it. Always keen to hear from people who want to read the news.
I agree with that as well. Email me, DM me, whatever, tweet me. We're always looking for talent too, and passion, as I said. And please listen to the output, because when I have been recruiting for jobs recently, the amount of people who aren't actually listening, you want to work in the audio business, you want to work in the radio business, that's my top tip.
So there we have it. There's your invitation. Absolutely go for it if news reading is something you would like to do. Make sure you weave in all the pieces of advice that they shared during the course of that conversation. Don't forget that we've got our last Monday's event, Monday the 24th of April. We've got the brilliant Fleur East, who's our guest speaker, joining me in conversation, networking, free drinks. So do come along if you're free and in the London area. All the details are on the Radio Academy's website, so take a look there, and it's free if you're a member as well. Always worth noting. Thank you to you for listening. Thanks to our guests. Until next time.